Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
För 6 år sedan intervjuade jag Graham Potter som då hade lyckats leda Östersund från division 2 till Allsvenskan. Då var han tveksam till chansen att han ens skulle få ett tränarjobb i England. Men nu har han fått ansvaret för Chelsea och tränardebuten för klubben skedde i Champions League. I poddintervjun berättade Potter om hur han tröttnade på fotbollen långt ner i det engelska seriesystemet och därför slutade som spelare och gick en annan väg som tog honom till Sverige. Graham Potter tackade Svenska fotbollsförbundet för att han fick tidig dispens från tränarlicensen och hjälp att få rätt utbildning. Och han var rätt hård kring engelsk talangutveckling, stod upp för sin spelidé och de kulturella utmaningarna som Östersund drev på.
När vinner ni Champions League?
Ja, inom 5 år i alla fall borde det vara realistiskt, men vi måste först ta oss till Allsvenskan.
En färgstark och offensiv ordförande. Kaxiga uttalande. En omtalad kultursatsning. Nya grepp för att få fart på ekonomi. Men framförallt, en framgångsrik och offensiv fotboll. Östersunds FK har gått från en anonym division 2-klubb till Sveriges poplag nummer 1 på bara 5 år. Den engelske tränaren Graham Potter har lanserat en offensiv fotboll och han har lyft laget som en raket genom seriesystemet. Och när det nu är dags för allsvensk debut har Potter inga planer på att ändra på framgångsreceptet.
I think it's important that we understand that what we've got, how we got here was a, you know, it's a big strength of ours and we need to then try and master that.
Visst, Graham Potter gjorde en säsong i Premier League på 90-talet, men mestadels höll han till i de lite lägre divisionerna i det engelska seriesystemet. Och det var också där han hittade inspiration till Östersunds bollägande och bolltrillande fotboll. Det är långt från den fotboll han själv spelade.
Well, I think because I experienced that football, I experienced it as a player. I experienced the frustration that I felt, and ultimately I stopped playing football as a 30-year-old when I could have carried on earning money playing football.
Med framgångarna kommer naturligtvis en del smickrande rykten. Graham Potter har efter att ha fört upp Östersund från division 2 till Allsvenskan dykt upp när det har spekulerats om klubbar som är på jakt efter tränare, både i Malmö FF och i Swansea i Premier League, dit Östersund har en koppling. Men engelsmannen ligger rätt lågt själv.
I haven't had any offers. It's all media speculation. That's how it is.
Och som vanligt börjar vi podden med en faktaruta.
Age? 40.
Family?
I have a wife and 3 boys. A 6-year-old and 2 twins, so 9 months old.
Where do you live?
I live in Östersund.
Education?
a master's degree in emotional intelligence and a degree in social sciences.
Salary?
Probably too much.
Which is your biggest experience regarding football? It can be when you played or from the pitch or from the stand or what, as a coach.
I would say this experience working here for the last 5 years has probably been the most, the biggest, most rewarding football experience.
Is there any moment that you that is stronger than any other, if you understand what I mean?
Yeah, probably the two that stick out, probably the first one was promotion to Superettan from Division 1. We had to play Sirius in the last match of the season in Uppsala. We had to win the game. We won 1-0. They hit the post in the last minute and it was proper nail-biting stuff. We had seven, I think it was 600, 700 people from Östersund coming down to watch us, which is incredible when you consider 5 years ago there was 600, 700 people actually in the stands here watching us. So to take that many people down there was great at Division 1. I think that was a real moment. And then, of course, promotion to Allsvenskan, the City on Skrå way, and getting over the line after the sort of season of, if you, the 4 years of progression to finally get to Allsvenskan was a big moment.
Which is the best player you played with?
With probably say at club level, Matthew Letizia. And I was fortunate at England under 18s to play with David Beckham, that I would say is equally, in different ways, fantastic players.
Best player that you've coached?
Mudo Barrow.
I don't know if you collected shirts when you played at the high level. Do you have any shirt at home that you're pleased that you collected?
I didn't really collect any, no, but for some reason I got a... We played Leicester in a cup, in the FA Cup, and for some reason I think I had Andy Impey's, who was playing for Leicester at the time, I think I had his top, so I think he's the only one I've got.
Is there any medal that you're extra proud of from your career?
I think the Division 1, winning Division 1 winners medal, coaching here for Östersund, is probably the one that I'm most proud of there. I didn't get that many medals, to be honest, in my career, so it's either that or the Division 2 winners medal, so that one.
Was there an opponent that you didn't like to play against when you played in England?
The best player I played against, I think, directly was... I played against... David Beckham was very difficult, but David Ginola, we played against him for Newcastle, and he was incredible. He could go both ways, physically a monster. And just, yeah, really good looking as well, so it was a bit of a...
Did you notice that too?
Well, it's hard not to, isn't it? Especially when he's going past you.
The best crowd that you played in front of?
Best crowd in front of? Probably Liverpool. Played Liverpool in a cup match. I'd say Anfield was a sort of a special environment.
Do you bet on football?
No.
Never have?
No. Well, maybe when I was younger I had a coupon with my dad, so he used to guess the results, pound, and try and pick seven results. But since I've been involved, don't bother.
Do you have a favourite team in England and here in Sweden?
My favourite team, I suppose Birmingham, because I started off there, is probably one of my favourite teams. But I was never really a massive fan. And here it's only Östersund.
Do you ever go to YouTube and look for any of your exploits on the pitch, or isn't there any?
I wouldn't have thought so, no. They would have been deleted if there's any.
What do you drive?
I drive a... I think it's pronounced Charan. It's it's almost like a minibus with all the kids.
Do you have a motto?
My wife would say my motto is it's never easy, because whenever I do DIY, it's never easy. So that would probably be my motto.
When was the last time you cried?
Relatively recently, I'd say about 2 months ago.
When was the last time you were drunk?
I might have been a little bit under the weather when we got promotion to Allsvenskan on that evening.
That's when you wanted to enter Soap Bar in Stockholm.
No, that wasn't. Thankfully, that wasn't me. That wasn't me.
Okay, you're innocent.
I was somewhere else.
Okay, that's good. Do you believe in anything? Or do you have faith?
I wouldn't say I'm over. Not really that religious. I believe in trying your very best to be a good human being as much as you can.
What do you read?
I read. At the moment, I'm reading a book by Kahneman, Thinking Fast and Slow. That's what I'm reading at the moment.
What do you listen to?
It's quite varied. Unfortunately, I'm going through a little bit of an 80s revival time at the moment, so my wife's going mad. But it's a real mix.
What do you watch?
Football.
How active are you in social media?
Not very. I'm a follower.
You're a follower, so you follow
people on Twitter. Yeah, that's it.
You're a lurker.
Exactly. Yes, if that's the term, then yeah, I've been called that before, probably.
Lyfter mot Hopcat. Ingen dum boll. Hopcat får med sig den. Hopcat rullar bollen i mål. Jamie Hopcat kvitterar till 1-1. Östersund i detta nu i Allsvenskan.
It sounds like a bit of a fairy tale, and I think it is incredible.
Östersunds makalösa resa genom seriesystemet har många dimensioner. Engelsmannen Graham Potter har inte bara lyft klubben från Division 2 till Allsvenskan på 5 år, utan även gjort det när klubben spelat en fantastisk fotboll. Man har varit bolltrillande och skapat mycket chanser och tagit en hel del risker, men samtidigt sett till att det inte rasslat in särskilt många mål bakåt. Än mer imponerande är resan om man betänker att Graham Potters klubb knappast haft några jättefinansiärer i ryggen som låtit honom värva hejvilt. Nej, det har snarare handlat om att engelsmannen har fått rota i fyndlådan och ta en del spelare som varit lite lätt kantstötta och försökt hitta deras motivation och drivkraft och kanske revanschlusta. Dessutom har klubben lyckats bygga en stark relation till staden trots att det är en främlingslegion i dagens idrottsvärld. Och det är än mer fascinerande. You're taking Östersund to Allsvenskan. What do you think we can expect from Östersund?
Well, I think that's the exciting thing. I mean, it's the first time that we've been there. The club's never been here. You look at our playing squad. I think, apart from maybe Valiata, none have played at the level, really. So there's nothing really to go off from a previous experience perspective. But we've got here in a certain way, got here trying to be as positive as we can. We needed to build an identity, we needed to build a football club based on helping players improve. And the challenge for us is to try and carry that into the highest level in Swedish football. So it's going to be exciting, it's going to be a real challenge for us, but hopefully we can be ourselves in the league, and whilst we respect the competition and respect the opposition, we have to try and be ourselves as well.
Will you modify the way you play, or will you keep on with the idea you had in Superettan?
No, I think we need to keep on with that. That's what's got us here. That's what's got us here from Division 2. That's the challenge. That's the challenge for us. We've come from Division 2. we've sort of got promoted from into Division One quickly, and the same out of Division One into Superettan, and arrived there, established ourselves. Along the way, sort of improved and sold players, moved them on. So the whole thing, I think the whole package has been based around a certain philosophy of football, which is around being trying to be positive, try and attack. But we're not stupid as well, you know. It's as you go through the levels, the competition gets stronger, and then it becomes even harder for us. So. But I think it's important that we understand that what we've got, how we got here, was it's a big strength of ours, and we need to then try and master that at a high level.
You have a chairman who is quite bold, and he talks about it's not a question if we're going to win the Allsvenskan, it's a question of when we're going to win, and you're going out in Europe, and so how is it to work with those kind of bold aims?
I mean, it's really, he's been fantastic for me. I couldn't have asked for a better chairman. From day one, he's been very clear, and the things I'm hearing now, I heard 5 years ago. So however strange it sounds now, it sounded a lot stranger 5 years ago when we were playing against Uma Dahlin and Junchila. But he's very clear. He tries to set a vision which we all try and sort of work towards. I think a lot gets taken out of context a little bit, and there's a little bit of mischievousness there sometimes. But essentially all he said to me is we need to try and win the next match and focus on that. We don't necessarily worry too much about where the league table says we're going to end up. Try and win the next match, and that's it. So it's very, he's very clear, and it's we're lucky to have him as a chairman.
How did you feel after the games in Svenska Cupen? Do you feel that you're taking the right steps? Or?
Yes, yeah. I mean, it's very early in the season for us. We played Norrköping in first game, Swedish champions. We'd been training outside for a week because obviously the weather up here isn't conducive to playing outside. So it was a good experience for us. It lets us know pretty early what you need to do to improve, where you need to, the difference between Allsvenskan and Superettan. A good experience for us. One that, like I said, gives us a lot of information about our group, and then how we need to go forward.
You have a pretty tough start, most would say, that playing first Hammarby away and then you have AIK at home. Is that good or bad?
Well, I think you're right. It is a tough start. The first week, it's 3 games in 6 days. So thank you very much for the schedule, whoever said that. It's a nice one for us. But, you know, we're not going to complain about the schedule or complain against who we're playing against. It's fantastic for us. We're in Allsvenskan and none of the games are going to be easy. We understand that. We've come up from Superettan and the rules of football say it's tough for people coming into a new league. So, but too great. The first two games are, like you say, fantastic fixtures. Hammarby away first game was sold out. And then the first game in Allsvenskan here, AIK, one of the biggest teams in Scandinavia. It couldn't have got any better. And like I said, 5 years ago, I think the first game was Uma Dahlin at home. So I'm certainly not going to complain about the start.
If you look at the players that you brought in, do you think you have managed to get a strong team enough to hang on to your position in Allsvenskan?
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy with the group, happy with how it's progressed. We had a foundation from Superettan that I think was important to keep. It's important to let those guys have the opportunity to prove that they can take the next step. And then even the guys that we brought in, really all of them, like I said, maybe bar Valinata, all of them have something to prove. None of them have played at this level, really. So they were the type of players we wanted to bring to the club. The type of attributes they've got, they've settled in really well. good personalities, and that's, like I said before, that's the exciting thing for us. We don't really know how it's going to go, but I believe in the players that we have here, believe in their attributes, and now the exciting thing is for them to prove, which I think is the most exciting thing in football, the unknown.
What's the most important when you look at the players that you want to bring in? What's most important for a new player to have? Is it like character, or is it speed, or what are the characteristics that you are looking for?
Well, I think firstly, when you're in Östersund, you have a responsibility to the town, to being here. The location works against you, but it works for you in terms of, you know, the nearest town's quite some way away. We're here together. So then the character and the personality is probably the most important thing, to fit into the group, to have the desire to want to improve, to want to be part of something that we're doing here. I think that's the first thing we look at. And then you know, our recruitment has been probably the same as we've moved through the levels. You're looking for, you know, attributes. You're looking for that gap that somebody maybe hasn't valued as much, or a way that you can work with that player to get a bit more value out of them that maybe, you know, conventionally isn't there. So you're looking for, like I say, people that are hungry, people that want to prove that they've got something to prove and have attributes and qualities that can affect the level. And then we try and puzzle it all together, because the facts are we can't attract top proven Allsvenskan players here. They're not going to come to Östersund, just like they weren't going to come when we were in Superettan. You couldn't attract top Superettan players when you arrive in Superettan. So you have to be creative with the type of people and the type of players you bring.
You kind of find players in either the bargain basement or scrap heap a little bit that you try to, maybe that's been discarded by other clubs. Is that difficult as for a coach?
No, I think it's interesting. I think it's fascinating part of the job, really. You know, you're just trying to work out, first of all, the human being, find out what's happened with their career, what's happened with their life, where they're at, what motivates them, and then their strengths, what they can bring to the group, and then you just got to try and puzzle it together. So I find that the most interesting part of the job. It's challenging, of course, and the easy bit is to have the proven players at the level. From a coaching perspective, it becomes a little bit easier then. But, you know, we've never been able to work in that way because of where we're at and the journey of the club. We had a, you know, you've got a football club here that hasn't got anything to offer in terms of culture, in terms of tradition or history. We've had to sort of build it up, and then you're looking for those type of guys that want to make something happen, make a difference, do something a little bit different to try and create an advantage or get some sort of advantage over the opposition.
A couple of the players that you've had here has been through some rough patches in their lives. What makes that? Does it make your job tougher as a coach when you have to take that into your process?
No, again, I've never had a problem with the players. I've never had a problem with that. I think, of course, they're human beings, and there's been mistakes been made with a few, and you can see that they've been scarred a little bit by certain things. But again, I think that's really, really interesting. Fundamentally, we have to make the decision whether they're good people, whether they want to, back to what I said before, whether they want to improve, whether they want to be part of what we're doing here. And then if they are, then we'll just try our very, very best to put them on the right track, or to help them express themselves in a way that they can be themselves. You know, if I think back to Mudo Barra, for example, he's probably a really good example of someone you'd sort of put in that category of a checkered past, and when he first arrived, you could see there's elements to his personality that were just a little bit not trusting, or a bit of a a bit of a different personality, but fundamentally he was a good lad that wanted to improve and wanted to play and wanted to enjoy his football. And then the more you invest in him and the more time that you give him and the group and everybody gets to know each other and there's that mutual if you like respect and trust, then things develop within the group, things develop within that individual, and then by the time he leaves us, you know, he's smiling as big as and he's also crying because he's missing his friends and his family that he's made here. And and I think that's, whilst that's a challenge to go through that process, it's not something that just happens. Whilst it's a challenge, I think it's the probably the best thing in the job.
Modabar, was there any hesitation on bringing him to the club? I mean, there's a discussion after Adam Johnson in Sunderland, we had Mikko Albonos in Malmö FF. I mean, as a club, what kind of moral responsibility do you take? Do you understand that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I always speak with Daniel, the chairman, about anything like that. I think our, you know, we can't, as I understand Swedish society, you know, we live in a society where the law has to punish people for whatever it is, and then once they're into society, they have to have an opportunity to carry on with their lives. That's how, you know, certainly we've seen it with any mistakes that have been made in the past. And then we have to feel comfortable that, again, regardless of what's happened in the past, that they're the right person for us going forward in terms of those, are they able to be a good person in our environment? So that's
how we look at it. How much is taking care of the human being and things like that part of your job as a coach? Or are you very much just on the football pitch?
No, I'd say my job is, it's always firstly they're people, they're human beings, they're with us for a couple of hours to train, and then the rest of the time they're somebody's son, somebody's brother, somebody's boyfriend, you know. So I think it's important that they, from my perspective being here, that I understand the players, understand what they're like as people, and try and help them develop as a person, because that they'll be that before they're in a long time after they're stopped playing football. So that's, and again, that's probably my motivation for being in this job. It's the exciting thing is getting to know players, getting to know people, helping them become better people rather than just picking a team and taking a training session. That's
when you meet a player who's possibly coming here and you want to kind of sell the club. I mean, as you say, you don't have the long tradition, you don't have maybe the biggest budget for salaries. How do you sell Östersund to a player coming here?
Well, it's very difficult. It was very difficult at first. It's got a bit easier now. Essentially, what we try and do here is create an environment where players can enjoy the football, they can improve, and they can feel part of something, and that's as simple as it is. Over time, I guess, because we've had success with, say, David Akam or Rasmus Lindqvist or even, you know, Mudo, Xiaomin Moon left us. There's been times where, as a football club, we've demonstrated that, despite the fact that we're maybe going for promotion or wanting to progress the football club, the opportunity, if the player outgrows us, to move and to develop their career, that's always been a sort of step that we've taken. And I think that, again, that just reiterates and shows that fundamentally it's about coming and trying to improve and trying to develop your football career. And of course, when you can say those things and you can demonstrate that, and from the player perspective, you can look and go, okay, this is interesting, because we have to offer something, we have to have something to for a player to move from the south of Sweden up to Östersund. If you're a Super Rätten player, you know, why are you coming to Östersund? Why are you moving up here? Why can't you stay down in the south where your family and your friends are? There has to be something to offer. And then, of course, there's a playing style around how we've worked, which again, when I go back to Mudo, he was attracted to coming to Östersund because he thought that this, how we played suited his style of football. And so it sort of runs, I think it runs hand in hand, really.
Was it a big difference this winter when you went up to Allsvenskan? Did you get a lot of more calls from agents that players want to come here?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably happened since we've been in Super, and I would say to a certain extent. And then, yeah, different Mudo, and then Allsvenskan just increases, but still the same. I guess the same challenges. It reminded me of when we were first in Super, and you know, Super players just that they don't want to play for Östersund, and you know, that's I completely understand that. And if you're a top Allsvenskan player, again, you're not, even if we could offer the same salary, you're not going to come and play for Östersund. So we have to look in a different way, and we have to look in a different market, and then that's our challenge. That's where the fun is.
You have Mudo Barrow in Swansea in Premier League, and David Ackham, who came from here and went to Helsingborg and then to Chicago Fire. Who's the next player to come from Östersund to take the step out?
Yeah, well, again, I've been asked that before, and I wouldn't want to say now. I think we've got it could be one of any. There's a lot of good players, but they need to prove at the level. They need to prove that they can take that next step. And I think it's not right for me to put any pressure on or dismiss anybody by naming. I could have named when we first signed Mudo that he was going to do what he did. And it's completely up to him. The same with David. It's not like you can predict it, and it's an exact. Oh no, we've signed him, and then he's going to go and play in this league or that league. I think that's the great thing about football. It's you don't know, and it's how people respond to the environment, how they take the challenge on in the games, how we do as a team. Lots of factors are there. But the exciting thing is, I think we've got a few players that haven't reached their potential, that have got a lot more to do. And then it's them to show.
You have a very international squad. Is that something that you've chosen, that we want to have an international squad, or is that kind of you've been forced to go that direction because there's not that many quality players in Östersund and you need to look for other type of players?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's fair to say that if you want to go from Division 2 to Allsvenskan only using players from Jämtland, it's going to be, that will be impossible. So then you have to look at how you can strengthen and how you can build. It's been a bit of a process. When I first spoke to Daniel in the first couple of years, he said that I remember him saying it's impossible to get players from the south of Sweden to Östersund. He said it would be impossible. I thought that's going to be difficult. But in the end, we sort of, I think, progressed and show that it can be something for us. But it's not been a, you know, we're going to go down this route or that route. It hasn't been anything like that. You don't look at the passport or the colour of the skin when you're recruiting a player. You're just looking for, again, I'm going to repeat myself, do they want to improve? Do they want to be part of this project? And do they think they could be happy here? And if those boxes get ticked, then that's great.
Does it mean anything for a team to have quite a few local players, or doesn't it matter?
No, I think it does, and I think you know, that we've got Dennis Wiedegren, we've got Bubu Salander, we've got Sebastian Lundbeck in our squad from Jämtland, which is great for us. Of course, you want to have more, and I think part of this process has always been to try and create an identity and a vision that people locally can look up to and say, okay, this is possible for us. Because 5 years ago, it's just impossible. You know, there's no football culture here. There's no football tradition here. No one believes that we can have players in this area playing in Allsvenskan. Now we've got three players in our squad that are in Allsvenskan. So it has to. We have to develop that, and I think we have to. Hopefully, the great thing about this journey has been that now you've got you know, young kids that can watch highest level football in their own town and think, well, this could be me. I could be the next Dennis Wiedergren. I could be the next Jamie Hopgood. I could be the next Bobo Solander. And then if we can do that, then maybe more players can be into our first team, because it is important.
What's your view of Allsvenskan?
I think it's in a really good place at the moment. It's probably the best place it's been since I've been here. You know, you look at the stadium, you look at the games, the big Stockholm derby, you know, the Gothenburg derbies, the Malmö FF in the Champions League. It feels like it's in a really good place, the most positive it's been. So we're, you know, honoured to be part of that, and we hope that we can add something to it as well. We can bring something positive to the competition.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Ja, men det är ju ingen idé att gå dit och vara någon form av turist. Liksom det som är själva kärnan i all tävlande, att bli etta. Liksom etta i varje moment, etta i matchen, alltså vinna matchen, vinna serien. Och vinner alla matcher, konsekvensen blir oftast då att du vinner serien. Men du kan ju bara bli mästare när du är allsvenskan.
När vinner ni Champions League?
Ja, inom 5 år i alla fall borde det vara realistiskt. Men vi måste ju först ta oss till allsvenskan.
Det är inte många klubbar där ordföranden är mer omskriven än tränaren. Men så är det i Östersund. Den frispråkige Daniel Kindberg levererar rubriker i parti och minut och talar om att nå Champions League och vinna SM-guld. Engelsmannen Graham Potter däremot, han håller en väldigt låg profil, och det är på något sätt lite talande att om man söker på Graham Potters namn på exempelvis YouTube så är det en bonsai-trädsentusiast som får flest träffar. Potter smyger helt enkelt lite under radarn, men skulle framgångarna fortsätta även i allsvenskan så lär telefonen börja gå varm på Östersunds kansli, och kanske det är dags för Potter att skaffa en agent.
What made you come to Östersund in the first time?
Well, I'd have to say it was the opportunity to live and work in another country, and it was Daniel's vision of the club, what he wanted to do. He was recommended to me by Graham Jones, who's a good friend of mine, who I trust very highly in terms of recommending people, and Daniel struck me as a guy that was interesting, that had a vision of what he wanted to do. And I was at the stage in my career where, thankfully, I persuaded my wife to essentially give up her life to come out. And like I said, thankfully, I was in that place where I could do that, could make that choice.
Did you realise how small it was football-wise?
Probably not, no. No, if I'm being honest, and when I look back, if I'd have known, maybe I wouldn't have... If I'd have known properly, maybe I wouldn't have moved... I can't answer that, but certainly I didn't think that it... Maybe I thought it was a bit different. But...
When you came here, was there any time that you thought, oh my God, what did I get myself into and with my family?
No, not really, because the people at the club have always been brilliant to me, and that made me feel really secure and happy. The people at Östersund Football Club will be my friends for the rest of my life. You know, I sort of love them, but you just realise there's a lot of hard work to go. That's the thing, and then you can't look too far ahead. You know, you sort of first game, I think we lost to Sollefteå in a pre-season match 2-1, and they were in Division 2 as well, and you think, well, the vision is to get here, but we're a long way off that. We need to do a lot of work, and we need to just step by step. At that point, it was just about literally getting a bit of belief back into a football club, people just trying to enjoy the football, trying to be happy at playing football again. So it's when I think back to that period, and I think where we are now, is it's night and day.
What did people in England say? Your old friends from football and so on. You told them, "I'm going to Östersund to coach a team in the Swedish fourth division."
They were just, well, that sounds, yeah, of course they're probably polite, but they say, "Yeah, that sounds really interesting." And I think it is. It was an interesting project. It was an interesting idea, and I wasn't at the stage of my career where I could just walk into an Allsvenskan job or anything like that. Part of the appeal for this was that the club had an idea, had a belief, or it had a vision of where it wanted to go, but it was just found itself in where it didn't want to be, in the fourth tier. So the challenge and the really exciting thing was trying to build it up to where it wanted to be, and to try and create something that people were proud of, that to build a football club. I don't think you get those sort of opportunities really.
Apparently Daniel, the chairman, is a man with great visions, and also he's a good salesman apparently since you came here. But isn't there any problem with someone who's that challenging with the aims, and that we're always going to be the best, we're always going to win the next game? If we don't win the next game, apparently our coach hasn't done his homework well enough. Isn't there any backside of having such a challenging chairman?
I haven't found there to be. He's always been fair with me. He's always supported me. He's always been great with my family. He's been consistent with how he's been. So I've found it, no, there's been nothing negative from my perspective. I think it makes it very clear. I think we all in football want to focus on trying to win the next match. That's how if you speak to most coaches, that's what they want to do. And of course the other things just, I suppose, generate a bit more interest, the headline stuff. But he's never said to me, "Oh, you know, Graham, we need to win this league or that league." It's always been the next game, and to focus that and try and win that game, and then from that we take the information from that and move forward.
Compared to your chairman, you have a kind of go under the radar media wise. Is that something that you've chosen, or is that just the way it's become since Daniel takes most of the headlines?
Yeah, I think so. Maybe, and obviously his Swedish is better than mine as well, which is obvious. No, I think it's easy to get a headline from Daniel. That's for sure. But I just go about the job and go about the work, and I don't sort of look for any sort of interviews, or I don't turn any down. I'm happy to speak to anybody, but it is what it is, so there's no problem.
You have quite a good career as a player. You even played in Premier League, 6, 7, 8 games, something like that, for Southampton, and played in the Championship and other divisions in the English. How was that?
Well, I was very fortunate. I got away with being a professional footballer for 13 years, and then I finally realised I was not so good. But I started off at Birmingham City. It was great as my hometown club. I made my debut at 17, but we were a bad team at the time, and pretty quickly I stayed in the team for sort of, I don't know, 25 matches, and then sort of discovered the harsh realities of professional football when you're in a bad team and you're losing, supporters turn on you, doesn't matter how old you are or where you're from. So that was a harsh lesson in terms of
Did anything happen with you?
No, just obviously just the English football supporters are not shy in telling you, letting you know what they think of you. I remember they had a Friday night television show, sort of Central Weekend Live it was called. It was just basically a chat show, and they used to bring in any sort of controversial subject and polarise opinion and get people in the audience and be a big debate. And then one was about Birmingham City, and I always remember my aunt told me that the subject was Birmingham City. Some guy stands up and he says, "I just want to say this, Graham Potter." And my aunt is watching the game and she's thinking, "Oh, you know, her ears prick up. She's going to be nice and proud." Graham Potter, he is the worst player ever to put on a Birmingham City shirt in my life. You know, so you get little things like that, which are part of the business and part of the job. But I have a lot to thank Birmingham City for, because they gave me that opportunity to start my career off. And then I had sort of the next probably 5-6 years moving to Southampton. I had a year at Southampton, some more time in the Championship with West Brom. So the first, I say, half of the year for my career was at a decent level, and the next half was, you know, Division 2, Division 1. But it's tough. I played in lots of positions, which I think helps me now as a coach. Playing at the different levels, from sort of under 21 international to the conference in England, gives you a full spectrum of the of the difference of the game. And that's the thing that most people find probably difficult to understand, that if you watch a game, you know, a reserve match at a Championship level, Premier League level, and you compare it to Division 2, it's like a completely different sport. The physicality of Division 2, the you know, the one manager saying, "I don't care what you do, even if you kick it and it goes out for a goal kick, it's fine." And I'm thinking, that's not really what I started to play football for, but I understand the concept.
How was it when you were part of the Premier League? You played in Southampton 1996, 97, something like that. Did you think that here I will stay for quite a while?
I didn't think that, no, and that's probably one of my, you know, problems as a player. I was probably didn't quite believe in myself enough, or didn't quite understand what it took to be a top player. I moved to Southampton. It was just at the start of the real Premier League boom, if you like. I think Zola, Bergkamp and those guys had just arrived, and there was a real interest. I suppose I struggled to really think that I could be good enough to play at that level. When I reflect back,
how was the slide when you started to slide down from Premier League and down in the lower leagues in England?
Well, I went for West Brom. I played quite a bit at West Brom, and then my contract ran out. And as it normally happens, to turn over a manager, your contract finishes, then it's time to look for another club, because I hadn't played that much. I had to look lower leagues. I signed for York for 3 years, and literally that was my first introduction to Division 2 football. And I'd been brought up on this, trying to pass the ball and play and you know, get forward and be an attacking sort of left back. And pretty quickly the ball's getting shelled in behind, and you're having to win physical challenges, and the game's just completely different. The up and down of the game was something I had to adapt to. And even though I played at a higher level, it took me probably 6 months to adapt physically and mentally to the difference in the game.
Because it was so tough.
Yeah, but it's different. And I think that's how, you know, if you look at English football, how challenging it is for you know, developing young players around in a certain way, academies and then the reality, once they leave that environment into lower level football in England, it's tough. You know, you make one pass sideways or backwards, and the crowd are on at you to get it forward. you know, everybody's massive and big, and you've got to physically stand up, and it is a different type of football.
If you look at the English football, it's not that much that you feel it's possession based. Maybe it's more so today in Premier League, but lower down. It's so surprising that you come with, I mean, our view in Sweden of English football is strike a long ball and then run, and you come to Sweden with something else. How come?
Well, I think because I experienced that football. I experienced it as a player. I experienced the frustration that I felt, and ultimately I stopped playing football as a 30-year-old when I could have carried on earning money playing football. So for me, it wasn't something that I really enjoyed being part of or seeing, really. So then it was about me trying to work out how to work in a different way and the benefits of that. So then it was about that period, that 5-year period.
Where did you get the inspiration from, except that you played like that? You say you watch a lot of football. I don't think you get that much in England, or am I wrong?
No, you probably don't, but I suppose because of my link with Graham, I got to see Roberto quite a bit work.
He's the assistant coach in Everton to Roberto Martinez.
And his journey from, I suppose, Division 1 in the third tier in England, when Swansea won promotion division from Division 1, you know, they played with a style of football and a playing style that you would previously to that would say that you can't play that way in Division 1 in England. So I suppose I got a little bit of a sense that it is possible to play a different way. But I still think that the fundamental motivation for me came from within, because, like I said, my sort of interest is to help players enjoy the football, and that comes from maybe not kicking it like I did out of the pitch for a goal kick. Well, that might just be my ability, to be honest. I can't blame anything on that other than my ability.
Which coaches are inspiring to you?
Obviously at the highest level, I'm really interested in Guardiola, because I think how he sets his teams up is interesting. His imagination in terms of how he plays is certainly different. But at the same time, I've followed Jurgen Klopp when he was at Dortmund. Really interesting to see how he's adapting to the Premier League. Even Van Gaal, how he's adapting, struggling at Manchester United. I'm not saying that I just think it's fascinating to follow the top coaches and see how they're dealing with the challenges they have. And then of course Roberto, I've followed for a number of years.
What do you think now when Guardiola comes to Premier League and Manchester City?
It's going to be fascinating, really. Especially if I've got a funny feeling that Mr. Mourinho will turn up at some club somewhere, which would then obviously add more spice to the thing. He's top. I think Guardiola's top, but then a rejuvenated Jose Mourinho involved in the mix could be interesting. I think Conte's getting close to Chelsea, isn't he? So it's going to make it. It's going to make it, from a coach's perspective, fascinating with Klopp as well. And I'm not sure the others how long they'll last, but it's going to be interesting.
If you look at the Premier League, what's your view of the development? I mean, the richest league in the world, a lot of money, but still they're moving ahead from at least the lower leagues in England, but they're struggling in Europe.
Yeah.
Do you like the development of the Premier League, that's more commercial and all that, and kind of like the terraces are gone in a way?
Yeah, it's English football. Course, this is probably another podcast. it's without doubt it's the toughest competition, I think, in terms of just the competitiveness of it. The physicality is still a big part of the competition, which makes it tough. But it is it's on its own. There's not a brand of football like it anywhere else, and that's probably the challenge in Europe. Why the teams haven't done as well as those in England think they would probably should do. But ultimately, playing against Stoke City or Norwich City or Aston Villa on a Tuesday night is not the same as playing against the big teams in Europe. It's a completely different, again, back to what I was sort of saying before, it's almost a different sport in some cases. So it's a real challenge. It has a knock on to development from an English perspective. The amount of money that players get that aren't even playing is scary, really. You wonder how they can be motivated to really have a career and to try to be a professional footballer, to make those different choices about moving down the leagues is tough, because the gap becomes financially and in terms of how the game is can be very different. So there's lots of things, but the one thing is money is not doesn't make it everything, all the problems go away, that's for sure. The money's there, but if you look at the European record, it hasn't been great. The national team hasn't filtered into being a success, but the Premier League is a monster in terms of its interest around the world.
Is Leicester an inspiration for you?
I think it's an inspiration for anybody. Talk about impossible stories. You know, this time last year they're bottom of the league, and now they're ahead of Chelsea, Manchester United, Tottenham, Arsenal, Manchester City. Top of the league, 5 points or whatever it is now. It's an incredible story, and just goes to show that if you've got an idea and you've got that willingness to work towards it, then I think that's fundamentally why we're in sport. We're in football. If everything was so predictable and the impossible can't be achieved, then that's a very dull world, I think.
You don't get as many talents forward as you used to be in the Premier League. Of course, very competitive league, and the international owners who bring in big stars, and it kind of squeezes out a lot of talents. Do you think that the English national team really get weaker, or do you think there would be a reaction?
It's a tough one to say, because the amount of people in England, you think that there's, despite the system, despite what anything happens, there's going to be some that will come through. The biggest challenge in England, I think, is they invest such a lot of money in the academy system, developing footballers. And then there's a bit of a gap between that and then first team football. And that's the real challenge, how I think a lot of talent, time, resources gets wasted in that period, because there's not enough football first team opportunities for them to play in. And then you're just looking at the ones, the Wayne Rooney's or the Steven Gerrard's, the ones that just come through despite of the system. Somehow English football has to work a way that can create players systematically, rather than by sort of chance. And probably at the moment it's by chance.
Are they too pampered and too well paid? I mean, in a way, if you reach the Premier League, even if you don't play, you still make a lot of money, and you kind of maybe make too much money in a short time.
Yeah, I mean, the system in England is once you're 18, you're given a professional contract. Well, that tells you that you're a professional. And very often they're not. They need to still learn how to be a professional. There's still a long way to go for them to be professional players. So there's an ongoing education process, I think, that has to happen. And also there has to be a way that they can still play football. There's a way that they can still... They need to go from their youth teams into proper football. And like I said before, if you're going to go from a Premier League youth academy and then you're going to go and play in the lower leagues in England, that's a completely different, almost a different game than what you've been experiencing. And then there's the managers at that level, they don't want to take those young players, because they want to take the ones that are proven at the League 2 level or League 1 level. So then it becomes a bit of a vacuum. They're trying to fill it within the 21s, but it's not so real.
Seems like a great opportunity for you to bring a lot of players here with your connections.
I guess it could happen, but they have to be the right type of people as well, and the right the club have to see it, and also you know you speak to some football managers. I know Roberto would say that if you're looking to prepare English, you know, players to play in England, then they have to experience English football. As soon as you go, and even though they might have a football experience somewhere else, they're not getting the unique physicality and the unique style and type of game they're going to get in the UK. So whilst they go and have a good experience in Sweden, it might not necessarily equate to them developing along their club. So it depends how they see it, how the individual would see it. So it's not quite so easy.
When the Euros get started, who do you root for, Sweden or England?
Both.
Which team will progress the furthest?
I'm not so sure. I'm not got a massive amount of I think Roy Hodgson is he's almost like a bit of a hero for me in terms of how his career's gone and how he's gone through, like you say, through Europe, and he's gathered all this experience. So I'm hopeful that he can do well in the tournament because he, I think he needs to. I think he's under that scrutiny. But if I had to say any, I would say maybe both would get out of the group, but that might be it.
You don't have the right license to be a coach in Allsvenskan. How come?
I've applied for the pro license for the last 3 years, but the English FA have said that I wasn't allowed to go on it. But thankfully they've promised me this year that I can go on the course. Education has been part of my development as a coach. Every year I've done something. But it's just been one of those things. I wanted to do I've done all my badges with the English FA, and I wanted to carry on doing it. And I think because I've been working outside, they prioritise their limited spaces for coaches working with English players. And I had to be patient. Thankfully, the Swedish FA have been good around the situation. I think they've looked at my particular position and said, as long as you do it next year, it should be okay.
Have you had a help with the Swedish FA to contact the English FA?
Yes, yeah, they've been great. They've been really good. So it's just one of those things. Like, I've wanted to do it. I wanted to, you know, sometimes you think that people do qualifications just to get the qualification. And I always wanted to be at a point where I had something to offer the course. I could actually get something from the experience. I didn't just want to go on a course just to get the tick that box. And I felt for the last two or three years I was as ready. I'd had an experience running a football club or being involved in a football club, and I felt that it was a good part, next stage of my coach development and education. So it was frustrating to not be able to get on. But that's, I understand as well, it's not so easy.
In Sweden, there's been a discussion, some former players, they don't think that you need an education or you should get a short track or fast track to get your badges. And you can see also in England that it's very easy for bigger players to get into management in a way. What's your view of a former player? Is education important to be a coach or not?
For me, it's fundamental. I think so. I don't believe in fast tracks at all. I think if anything, you know, the top player has got the potential to be the top coach. That's absolutely. but I think there'll be certain things in their skill sets that they'll need education, they'll need help with. And I think rather than looking about fast tracking or long tracking, if you like, it's about tailoring to the individual. But you know, when you ask, when you think about football, footballers, of course, the knowledge of the game is there. They've had a great experience of playing the game. So that at the highest level, they know the game, but still they need to be able to communicate that to somebody. They need to be able to build relationships with people, be able to empathise with people, understand what's happening within the group. There are different aspects to the job than just your own experiences. But of course, they have the. I think that the ex-players, top players, have the potential to be the top coaches. But by just dismissing education, I'm not sure that's the right path.
You've been in Sweden quite a few years now. Are there any coaches that are impressive?
There are lots. You know, Superettan especially, coaches working there that are doing really, really good jobs. You know, Kim Bergstrand at Sirius, for example, is doing a fantastic job there, building the football club, and we've followed each other as we've gone through the levels. He's done a great job there. Bartosz at Frey, I think there's a great job with limited resources, kept Frey into Superettan with an interesting style of play as well. I have a lot of respect for the coaches that I've come across in Swedish football.
Now you've gotten quite a media attention in England also. There have been a couple of stories, Independent, Daily Mail and so on, after you kind of made your mark here. Have you noticed that? Have you noticed that you got more attention in your home country?
No, not really. I think that just the news filters back to the UK, and I think the story itself of the club is an interesting one, and then you start to put the culture stuff of course, then Mudo as well. There's a few links. So I suppose when you're a journalist, it is a nice story. I think it's a story of a football club that's progressed. There's something different off the pitch going on as well. So I think only from that perspective, I've noticed a general increase in interest, just because I think as well we're in Allsvenskan now.
But there are very few English coaches abroad, and if you look in Premier League, I think there are only three English coaches left in Premier League.
Yeah.
Why do you think it's going down? I mean, your football comes from England from the beginning.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I think, you know, how many want to take the opportunity to move abroad? I don't know. There's the mentality in England that you know, everything's there. We don't need to move anywhere else. There's a bit of an island mentality, maybe. Also, the opportunities to move aren't there as well. In fairness, I'm not sure. I don't know why that is. I think the ownership in the Premier League and the highest level, you're dealing with European footballers most of the time in the Premier League, not that many English players as well. So maybe the owners are looking at it and going, I want someone with an experience of working with different nationalities. It's very hard for an English manager now, I think, to work his way through the local, through the lower levels and to get to the point where they can take a job in the Premier League. I suppose in a way, people are hoping that David Moyes would succeed because he'd done a stint in Everton, did a great job there, but taking that next one on to the big Manchester United job. So, yeah, but it's up to the English coaches to educate more, to be better.
Is it a way, if you have success abroad, it takes quite a while? I mean, if you look at Roy Hodgson, he had a lot of success abroad. It took a very long time. He had a short stint at Blackburn Rovers, and then a long time before he was kind of acknowledged even in England. Do you feel that from your side, that it's hard, even though you've had great success here, that still to come back to England, the English FA hardly will give you the badges?
There is a bit about it that, like I say, I'm an Englishman, so I can say this, that it is quite blinkered to you know, English football, and people aren't too interested about football outside of England. That's what it is. So, you know, I remember Arsene Wenger first came and he was like, where's he working? In Japan, sort of. That was his, how it was sort of seen. So there is a little bit of that, but it doesn't.
Is it kind of like an arrogance?
Yeah, arrogance, ignorance, call it what you want. Probably, and it's not, of course, that's not all the, in every case, but again, probably the strength of the Premier League, the competitiveness of the football in the UK. You know, you've got five leagues, all professional. In the fourth tier, fifth tier in English football, you can have 10,000 people watching the game. So it's a real pressure situation all the way down. So there's not much room for anything else. But yeah, it's a tricky one to really put your finger on. Why?
What's your aim? If you look, we don't care about Östersund, but where's Graham Potter in 3 or 5 years?
I never think like that. I've never thought.
Sure, you do. We all do.
No, not really. My job was I'd see this as far as I'm here as long as people want me here and I'm the right person to improve the football club. I think as soon as you start to look too far ahead in football, you take your eye off the job that you're doing now. We're in a really exciting phase here. This is sort of making history. However long this club stays in Allsvenskan, there'll only be one first year, and this is it. So we're, you know, my focus is on that. When I was, you know, 3 years ago, 5 years ago, I didn't think about, oh, I'm going to be still in Östersund, or I'm going to be doing this. I remember listening to, I think it was Steve McLaren saying that he felt like he wasted the first half of his career because he was thinking I wanted to be somewhere else, you know, the next level. And it's not really how I would just want to improve. I want to be a better coach. I want to be a better sort of manager, if you like, a better leader at a club. So the level is not really, I haven't got any plan around that.
But if you look at the club, they're talking about, we want to win Allsvenskan, we want to play the Champions League. Where do you want to coach?
Well, yeah, I want to be part of that, of course. And
but do you want to coach in Premier League?
It's not, again, it's not something that I'm going, oh, you know, this is part of my plan, but it's football. I'm only 40, so I'm quite young. Who knows what's going to happen with the rest of my life. But it's not, as a player, I had this, I want to play here, I want to do that, I want to do this. And you have these desire to play in the Premier League, and I played there. I had a year at that club at Southampton. It was great. But my motivation now isn't the level, isn't the Premier League or the Champions League or Allsvenskan. It isn't that. It's feeling like I'm making a difference, feeling like I'm improving, feeling like I'm helping the players improve. I call it job satisfaction. That's the most important thing to me, because you can get on the wrong path of wanting to get to this level that's supposedly meant to be this and that, and you can be disappointed. So I'd rather focus on my job and like I say, trying to improve.
How many offers have you said no thanks?
I haven't had any offers. It's all media speculation. That's how it is.
But you've had discussions with other clubs?
No, I haven't. No, never.
Never?
No.
You swear on the Bible?
Swear.
So Malmö FF didn't call you and ask, are you interested now when we're changing Åge Hareide?
No.
And Swansea, even though someone...
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like worried of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.